Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. Ask Me Anything episode. What is going on, James O'Keefe and Project Veritas? Why are professors justifying pedophilia and so many other topics? Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, it's charliekirk.com/support. I want to thank three very generous contributors. Kathleen, thank you. Karen, thank you. And Paula, thank you. charliekirk.com/support to get behind the work we are doing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's Monday. It's an Ask Me Anything episode. Make sure you are subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. I want to get to your questions here that you've emailed me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Harry from North Dakota has emailed me, Charlie, what is going on with Project Veritas? It's all very confusing and scary. Thanks so much. Probably listening on the wonderful Flag Radio Network. What's happening with Project Veritas and James O'Keefe is an unprecedented story happening in real time. There's a lot of details to this story. But first, let's introduce the actors. Of course, James O'Keefe and Project Veritas, both of which have been regular guests on the show. James O'Keefe is a journalist and has had numerous stories throughout the years of whether it be unveiling voter fraud, whether it be going after the pharmaceutical companies, which I think is really what irritated them lately, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, whether it be going after the voter fraud apparatus, all these sorts of things. James O'Keefe is an undercover journalist at Project Veritas. And last week, Project Veritas journalist got a knock on the door. And on the other side were FBI agents with battering rams like the SS that stormed into Project Veritas journalists' homes, but it did not stop there. The next morning, on Saturday morning, again, early at James O'Keefe's home, they raided James O'Keefe's home all in search of a diary that would at most constitute petty theft. So why is the Federal Bureau of Investigation knocking down doors and putting people in handcuffs and confiscating devices all for a diary that was questionable of its efficacy in the first place that James O'Keefe never actually even ran? He never ran the story. He could not verify its authenticity. And therefore, James O'Keefe did not run with it in any way, shape, or form. And so this begs a lot of different questions. And the first one that we need to kind of walk through is who's going to hold the FBI accountable when they start knocking down doors of journalists that they don't like? We have another question of Ryan here from Arizona. Charlie, who's going to cross-examine the FBI? The answer is currently no one. And quite honestly, it seems as if the Republicans in Congress are more interested in passing infrastructure packages than asking why Joe Biden's secret police are going after journalists they don't like. Play cut 20, Fox report on the FBI investigation of Project Veritas and how the diary that apparently belongs to Joe Biden's daughter. Play cut 20.
On Friday, O'Keefe acknowledged Project Veritas is under investigation by the Justice Department over the apparent theft of a diary reportedly belonging to Ashley Biden, President Biden's daughter. Just days before the 2020 presidential election, pages from the diary were published by a right-wing website, which reportedly has ties to O'Keefe. The site claims it received the diary from Project Veritas. O'Keefe says a copy of the diary was leaked to Project Veritas by a whistleblower, but they chose not to publish it because they could not verify its authenticity.
Now, we've gone through in great detail. The New York Times published Trump's tax returns against U.S. federal law. Whether it be the Pentagon Papers or the Panama Papers, there are numerous examples of journalists publishing classified in illegal material and not going to jail for it. Journalists are always carved out with First Amendment exemptions, but not James O'Keefe. And the story gets even stranger and creepier and in a way and more dangerous and more urgent. But first, let's play cut 39. James O'Keefe on the great Sean Hannity's program talking about how the FBI is raiding his and other Project Veritas journalists. So basically, Joe Biden gets to deploy his secret police, the FBI, otherwise known as the SS right now, which pains me to say because there are so many good members of the FBI in the boots, not in the suits, that go knock on doors in the Southern District of New York to then go after James O'Keefe because they don't like his politics and he unveils stories that they don't appreciate. Play cut 36.
By making this statement, I am putting myself at great risk because on November 4th, Project Veritas came under attack. I woke to the news that apartments and homes of Project Veritas journalists, or former journalists, had been raided by FBI agents. It appears the Southern District of New York now has journalists in their sights for the supposed crime of doing their jobs lawfully and honestly, or at least this journalist.
But it gets even stranger than that. So then the New York Times writes an article about 12 hours ago, 12 to 19 hours ago, where the New York Times wrote this article, Project Veritas and the Line Between Journalism and Political Spying. Now, I don't know what the New York Times was thinking of writing this article. This article was by Adam Goldman and Mark Mazzetti. But in the third paragraph of this piece for the New York Times writes the following. Project Veritas has long occupied a gray area between investigative journalism and political spying. And internal documents obtained by the New York Times reveal the extent to which the group has worked with lawyers to gauge how far its deceptive reporting practices can go before running afoul of federal laws. The documents, a series of memos written by the group's lawyer, details ways for Project Veritas sting operations would typically diverge from standard journalistic practices by employing people who mask their real identities. Hold on a second. They're looking at private, confidential, and privileged memos? How did they get them? How did the New York Times get their hands on on confidential and privileged attorney-client communications, a sacred element of the American justice system? How did the New York Times get their hands on attorney-client privileged material? Is it legal for the New York Times to get their hands on attorney-client privileged material? Now, mind you, the same thing we saw in the Kyle Rittenhouse story, where they are going after the Fifth Amendment rights of Kyle Rittenhouse, and the judge decided to defend the Constitution. The New York Times is now going after another core component of the American judicial order and tradition, attorney-client privilege. And what's the big bombshell? The New York Times says that Project Veritas asks their lawyers if it's legal, the stories they're going to run. That's it. But instead, the New York Times, I think, unintentionally revealed that they are getting information from some unseemly sources. Now, we're going to play cut 133 of Harmeet Dhillon, who's Project Veritas's lawyer. But before we play that, I want you to understand that the FBI and Department of Justice, they confiscated James O'Keefe's phones. They were uploading James O'Keefe's data to some sort of database at the FBI. A judge just intervened and said they're not allowed to do that. And then, strangely, the New York Times all of a sudden has privileged and confidential memos. If your conversations with your lawyer are not privileged, the justice system as we know it is gone. Play cut 133.
You know, what we have right now is a very disturbing situation of the U.S. Attorney's Office and or the FBI tipping off the New York Times to each of the raids on Project Veritas's current and former employees last week. We know that because minutes after these raids occurred, they got calls from the New York Times, which is the only journalism outlet that knew about it. And they published this hit piece today, which is really despicable. I don't think I've ever seen this low from the New York Times before to publish people's private legal communications.
So the New York Times publishes private and privileged legal communications, which I don't think is legal. I don't mean legal communications, meaning lawyer-league communications, communication between a lawyer. I don't think you're allowed to do that. But then the New York Times is accusing James O'Keefe of being a spying operation. How did you get his communications with his lawyer? One could assume, and one could make the argument, that the FBI is leaking privileged memos to the New York Times to destroy James O'Keefe. Now look, James O'Keefe has known the work that he's been involved in has been, he's made enemies all up and down the ladder, from union bosses to Democrat political operatives to Governor Murphy to Pfizer to the Department of Homeland Security. James O'Keefe has picked some massive fights. And if you do that as a journalist, let it be known, Joe Biden will send his secret police after you. I want you to imagine over 100,000 Americans losing their jobs. You could stop imagining because it's a reality. Since 2015, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches in the United States have shut down. Why? Because foreign meat is stealing their businesses and robbing you of the quality and flavor that you deserve. That's why Good Ranchers is here. They exist to support local American farms that help you make great American meals. Restore the American ranch and your meals to the former glory. Get the beef, chicken, and seafood that can't be imported or matched at GoodRanchers.com. GoodRanchers.com completes three basic needs. Number one, you have to eat. Number two, you want to support the country. Number three, support the Charlie Kirk Show. Did you know the product of USA tag has been stolen by foreign countries? Because of the foreign labeling laws that favor foreign imported meat, over 100,000 independent farms and ranches have closed since 2015. Support American beef and meat, everybody. Good Ranchers is here to put America numero uno first at the dinner table and farmers that work to raise the meat we eat. So get a box of meat delivered straight to your home. And last week, Good Ranchers upgraded their website to handle the traffic that came from the listeners of this show. Thank you for supporting Good Ranchers. They support us. If you had trouble ordering last week, GoodRanchers.com is back and better than ever with an extra special limited time offer. Just go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie right now and get 10 free bistro fillets, and even better, subscribe and save $25 on each box of mouth-watering American meats for life that will show up on schedule right to your door. That's right. Get 10 free bistro fillets. That's $100 value and free express shipping if you go to GoodRanchers.com/Charlie or use code Charlie at checkout. That's 10 free bistro fillets, free express shipping, and $25 off your subscription for life at GoodRanchers.com/Charlie. Support the show, support the country, and eat well. GoodRanchers.com/Charlie. So I'm not done with the Project Veritas story. So Project Veritas is probably the greatest thorn in the side of the American ruling class. To give an idea, James O'Keefe has successfully exposed the VAERS database, Health and Human Services, Pfizer, the vaccination of children, critical race theory, wokeism in the military, Hasbro, which is making toys for children and how that they are implementing critical race theory within the manufacturing of toys for children. James O'Keefe has fought every major fight imaginable. And yeah, he's upset some people along the way. James O'Keefe has made the biggest enemies you could possibly make, including Joe Biden. James O'Keefe seems to be hitting home run after home run, and we have him on our show to celebrate those victories because many people in the activist press and even many people in the establishment right, they aren't so keen to actually celebrating the great work of Project Veritas, a legitimate journalist organization. And so therefore, because of all the enemies that James has made, he has been targeted and listed for destruction. And make no mistake, this is the way it works. Joe Biden and the regime, they have had James O'Keefe's name on a piece of paper encircled for quite some time. They want him gone. They want him done. And now, so thankfully, James O'Keefe is rather smart and he's careful. He is not reckless. He knows the fights that he's been picking. He knows the people he's been exposing. And so James O'Keefe came across and was exposed to this diary of Ashley Biden, which we were told was fake at the time, which obviously it isn't. It's not fake. It's probably very real enough that you're trying to mobilize the entire apparatus of the United States government to try to, of the law enforcement government to try to prevent the either publication or the dissemination of such product. And so what we have in the kind of unveiling and the rolling out of this story is you realize that James O'Keefe didn't publish anything. That James O'Keefe did not monetize the diary. He did not publish the diary. No, instead, James O'Keefe was a lot more prudent and decided that it probably wasn't a good idea to run with the story. But they saw their opening. The regime saw their opening, and they decided to raid James O'Keefe's home. But I have a theory that the true motive behind going after James O'Keefe in this raid was not the diary. The diary was an excuse. They wanted James O'Keefe's phone. They wanted the phone and the device of James O'Keefe for a very specific reason. They wanted to get insight into what stories he's working on, and they wanted to try to go through all of his communications to try to see if there might be one opening, one weak spot where they could indict him. They wanted to try to get to James O'Keefe's phone for a very specific reason. They wanted to see that through all of his private communications, his emails, his text messages, his phone calls, is there something possibly where they could find something in the millions of data points in James O'Keefe's phone that might run awry or against the U.S. criminal code? That's what they really wanted. That's the motivation. And the motivation is exactly why the Department of Justice has to be stopped before uploading all that information. But then, as almost like a warning shot, the New York Times suspiciously comes across all of the privileged information of James O'Keefe and Project Veritas. How'd they get that information? Someone has to answer for this. You're not allowed just to knock down a door because of suspicion you have someone's diary. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, you have a diary that we want, or we think you have a diary we want, therefore we can kick your door in. And by the way, how about the unequal application of door kicking? Do you think that they would go kick a diary in for just a random person? How about Edward Durr? Edward Durr from New Jersey. If Edward Durr lost his diary, do you think the FBI would go on a manhunt for that diary? So why do they go on a manhunt for the president's daughter's diary? Is there classified information? Is there nuclear codes in the diary? Is there troop movements in the diary? Is there information about how the Taliban got $85 billion in that diary? Or is it that there's something that's potentially politically incriminating in there and embarrassing that make a public display that if you dare even think about going after his daughter's diary, petty theft, you're getting your door kicked in and your device is going to be confiscated. Every Republican in the country needs to be outraged about this. And instead, I'm seeing silence. Charlie Kirk here, and I've warned you about home title theft, where cyber thieves remove you from your home's title and you become the owner. Like I said, you better get home title lock because it's coming. Well, if you are on Facebook, that big data breach is here. Facebook has 500 million accounts that were exposed to cyber thieves. And according to a retired FBI cybercrime expert, everything thieves need to take over as the new owner of your home was leaked. Name, address, personal information, and more. It's out there. The thief forges your signature on a quitclaim deed stating you sold your home to him. He'll leave you in debt or even have you evicted. Do what I did and protect your home's title with HomeTitleLock.com. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Then sign up for 30 free days of protection during this high-risk breach. Again, go to HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio. That's HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio. There's a lot of data out there. There's a lot of things that you got to sort out right now. So go to HomeTitleLock.com. Protect yourself, protect your family, protect your well-being at HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio. You're not seeing a huge support from institutional Republicans around Project Veritas because they are actually part of the very same apparatus that Project Veritas tries to expose. The intelligence apparatus, the deep state, all those different things that Project Veritas attempts to try to expose, many moderate Republicans actually have a very favorable opinion of those different agencies. Okay, let's get to another question here. We're going to stay on top of the James O'Keefe story. Nikki from Tampa Bay. Hey, Charlie, I saw a video apparently of a professor at Old Dominion University talking about something called a minor attracted person, or MAP. Isn't someone who's attracted to minors a pedophile? Yes. Why should we be okay letting someone like that teach our kids? So this video is hitting the rounds. It does not surprise me. I deal a lot on college campuses. I know what parents go into debt for. I know kind of why I know what kids learn from, which is not much. So this is at Old Dominion University. Now, mind you, Old Dominion University would not necessarily be the stereotypical most radical university on the planet. It's a public school. It's in Norfolk, Virginia. It's one of the largest universities in Virginia. But little do people know that Old Dominion has pedophile apologists on their staff. So this is a professor. This is someone who's in charge of teaching your children. And play cut 136 of this person. I do not know the gender of this person, saying that we need to reframe the way we look at pedophiles. Cut 136.
Thank you so much for that question. I use the term minor attracted person or MAP in the title and throughout the book for multiple reasons. First of all, because I think it's important to use terminology for groups that members of that group want others to use for them. And MAP advocacy groups like Before You Act have advocated for use of the term MAP. They've advocated for it primarily because it's less stigmatizing than other terms like pedophile. A lot of people, when they hear the term pedophile, they automatically assume that it means a sex offender. And that isn't true, and it leads to a lot of misconceptions about attractions toward minors. I've definitely heard the idea that you brought up, though, that the use of the term minor attracted person suggests that it's okay to be attracted to children. But using a term that communicates who someone is attracted to doesn't indicate anything about the morality of that attraction.
Unbelievable. This is a person who's a professor. There should be a stigma around pedophiles. And there should be a stigma around people who are attracted to minors. They're sickos. They should be in mental hospitals or in prison. No. We need to destigmatize minor attracted persons. We've been warning about this for quite some time, that there is this strange decriminalization movement. We saw that in California in the midst of the pandemic when Gavin Newsom signed the decriminalization of pedophilia bill, and this very strange movement. And this is not just some one-off activist. This person is in charge of the education of your children at Old Dominion University, saying that we need to have a new framing, not call people pedophiles, but instead we need to have the legalizing of childlike sex dolls and routinely comparing pedophilia to a form and acceptable version of sexuality. This is where we're headed. When you do not have the moral guardrails on society, do not be surprised when all of a sudden you have professors, college professors. You just heard from a college professor that is arguing and advocating for the normalization of pedophilia. You can keep on emailing us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. So I want to get to this study here. This is in relation to a question that Mark from Texas has asked us. He says, Charlie, talk more about how young people are miserable and unhappy. I just don't get it. Thanks so much, Mark. So there's a new study out today, and I think it's actually from the Center for American Progress, which is a super left-wing think tank, that is a sting kind of piggyback piece off of what we talked about earlier this week about the gayest generation in American history, where 40% of young people consider themselves to be lesbian, bisexual, or gay. And this new story out shows that more than 2 in 3 of members of Generation Z reported poor physical health that kept them from their daily activities. Where, and get this, this is incredible, 81% of members of Generation Z feel at least a couple days a week so sad that nothing could cheer them up. 81% of members of Generation Z say 81% they're so sad that nothing can cheer them up, versus baby boomers, where 71% say they never feel that way, ever. 86% of Generation Z feels nervous most days of the week. 86%. 95% of Generation Z say that negative feelings interfere with their daily life or activities. And then poor physical health, 70% or 2 in 3, 66% say that bad physical health has kept them from daily activities. It's the most inactive, suicidal, depressed, and medicated generation in American history. And we were told that we need to legalize marijuana and give everyone access to unfettered access to internet pornography and everything's going to get better. No, actually, you have the most anxious, nervous, directionless, and purposeless generation in American history. And people say, well, you know, it's a mental health issue. You better believe it's a mental health issue. They have no purpose because they've been told to reject things that give them objective meaning and value. And it's also a result of neoliberalism and unfettered licentiousness. We have piles of plastic and meaningless textile shirts as far as the eye can see. We have screens in every pocket, and we have a broken people. We got vaccines in every arm, marijuana that will be delivered to your doorstep if you ask, and it's the most anxious, depressed generation in American history. And I don't say this to depress people, I don't, but I hope I can wake up some parents that are listening to this right now. You have no idea how bad we have created a society and a set of circumstances. And so, you know, people say, well, Charlie, what does that look like? How about this? If your six-year-old wants gender transition surgery, you tell them to knock it off. How about that? If your five-year-old's like, oh, I'm a dolphin. No, you're not a dolphin, actually. If your 14-year-old all of a sudden wants to sit around and watch TV and play video games all day long or gets into drugs, you as a parent come in aggressively and start to parent them and stop being their friend. You're not their counsel. You're their parent. Give them direction, especially young men. And then you'll start to actually see things start to naturally heal themselves. So you have incredibly anxious and nervous women because they have to start to act like men because all the men are metrosexual losers. Not all the men, but so many young men are metrosexual losers now because they've been told to be. No direction, no purpose, no understanding of where, right or wrong. So they just self-medicate. Drugs, alcohol, other addictive patterns of behavior. And not to mention the most obvious thing, it's the least religious generation in American history. So you remove religion and you remove Christianity and everyone gets piles of plastic they don't care about and a screen in their pocket and you go do drugs that don't really matter and they start walking around. They say, what's the purpose to life? There's actually a really important purpose to life. It's the pursuit of the good, the defense of liberty, understanding of beauty, and finding yourself in a transcendent order. It's a tragedy when you look at this. Because we now have the most wealthy society in history. We can get cars on delivery. Look at that. We can get Uber. We can get marijuana on demand. We can find any show we want to show, and a generation is miserable. Maybe the more stuff we've had and the more we've engaged in neoliberalism, internationalist trade policies, and mass immigration, it's actually made people more depressed. Maybe us worshiping at the altar of GDP and stock prices has actually made people really disconnected from reality. Churches and temples have lower attendance than ever before. Viktor Frankl, who is the author of the wonderful book, Man's Search for Meaning, and also is the creator of something called logotherapy, he made the argument of will to meaning. He said that this creates an existential vacuum. If you do not believe in a transcendent higher order, that there are some things that are greater than others that you should try to pursue, that you should be pious and reverent and self-controlled towards a greater good, then you will be miserable, especially if you're a 17-year-old. And honestly, shame on parents that have indulged in this garbage with their kids. You don't need religion. I'm going to listen to my kids and I'm going to give them what they want. Look at the stats. The stats are stunning. They take your breath away. That nearly 75% of Generation Z say that they feel sad more days than they feel happy. Not to mention the cost of the lockdowns, the student loan issue, the propaganda campaign in the public school system. You could throw all that into there. But the one thing that quite honestly transcends more than anything else is religion. The combination of the mind, body, soul, or mind, body, spirit. You remove that, there will be an existential vacuum. You just become mind and body. Your entire society will go to bedlam and will be in a moral hurricane. Look, we all complain about the woke industrial complex, the woke Marxists that are running our schools, that are running media, and yes, also running our banks. You see, look, the real estate market, it's red hot. Tyler, he just sold his home and he said, Charlie, I've never seen the market so unbelievable. So maybe you want to go buy a home. Maybe they're taking advantage of low interest rates. With all the economic uncertainty underway, people need to invest in real stuff. So here's a rule of thumb. We here are a solution-based show. So if you don't like the woke nonsense, stop using the woke banks. It's that simple. No more Wells Fargo. No more JP Morgan. No more Goldman Sachs. No more big bank culture. Instead, I have these two great friends, and they do a great job. It's Andrew and Todd, Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian. They love the Lord. They are Christians. They are honest. They are straight shooters, and they are on a mission to make sure that you guys can refinance but be told the truth. Look, when I took out mortgages for the properties that I have, it was one of the worst experiences I've ever been through. Yeah, some of the people were very nice, but I could tell you the bank itself was just so bureaucratic and hard to work with. My producer, Andrew, is working right now with Andrew and Todd to fight against the woke banking culture. And he tells me that they're part counselors, part financial counselors, planners, and they're really helping him. So here's the thing. Andrew and Todd are mortgage bankers. They're not brokers. That means Andrew and Todd and their team can take care of your loan personally from start to finish. You'll likely actually talk to Andrew and Todd yourself. So right now, maybe you're walking or you're like, I want to refinance the home, or maybe I'm under the process. Stop it. No more Wells Fargo. They're funding $1 billion to BLM Incorporated. Drives me nuts. Bank of America shut off a U.S. Senate candidate who's running in Senate in Delaware, just shut off their bank account. Instead, let's support the good guys. I know a lot of you right now say, Charlie, I want to support the good guys. Let's do it together, okay? So here's how you do it. Go to andrewandtodd.com. That's pretty easy to remember, right? Andrew, Todd, andrewandtodd.com, or call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172 and say, hey, I want to talk to Andrew and Todd. Charlie Kirk told me to call. In fact, I just had this unbelievable meeting with them. We talked theology. We talked the church. They're conservative. They're unbelievable. And all you have to do is call them up. Just go to andrewandtodd.com, call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172 and say, Andrew or Todd, I would like to speak to you. Charlie Kirk sent me. And I'm telling you, you'll probably get them on the phone unless they're traveling or handling some crisis. They take a lot of the phone calls themselves. Great people. AndrewandTodd.com. No more woke banks. Let's work together to crush the back of woke Wall Street and support the good guys. AndrewandTodd.com. This is a question from Brian from Kentucky. Hey, Charlie, what is all this about racist roads? I just don't get it. What is going on? It doesn't make any sense anymore. Well, maybe you missed it or not, but Pete Buttigieg, the automaton that was built to be the head of Department of Transportation, what is his experience in Department of Transportation? Let me just say this. Edward Durr, being a truck driver, is far more qualified to be the head of the Department of Transportation than Pete Buttigieg. Far more qualified. He actually is driven on the interstate highway system. He knows how to operate a truck. Pete Buttigieg, the automaton that was basically born out of central casting of trying to be, I can't even describe it. Someone who has been programmed to be a government bureaucrat his entire life. Cut 49 says, if an underpass was constructed such that a bus carrying mostly black and Puerto Rican kids to a beach, or would have been in New York, was designed too low for it to pass by, that obviously reflects racism that went into those design choices. What? Cut 49.
As to where we target those dollars, you know, I'm still surprised that some people were surprised when I pointed to the fact that if a highway was built for the purpose of dividing a white and a black neighborhood, or if an underpass was constructed such that a bus carrying mostly Black and Puerto Rican kids to a beach, or that would have been, in New York, was designed too low for it to pass by, that obviously reflects racism that went into those design choices.
Obviously reflects racism, yeah. Of course, why blame any other possible choice? I don't know, funding, underpass requirements, city measures, city council. No. The only explanation would be that those crazy KKK white supremacists in New York, you know what? They had a special 2 a.m. meeting to say, let's make the bridge low so that in a sweltering day of July heat, the Black and Puerto Rican kids that go on a bus to go to the beach, they'll have to find another way to get there. That's Pete Buttigieg's message to you. By the way, every Republican that voted for the infrastructure package, you just gave all that money to Pete Buttigieg to go rebuild racist roads. That's what he was talking about. Okay, let's go to some more questions here that we have. Freedom@charliekirk.com. Freedom@charliekirk.com. And by the way, here's a really simple question. How did the white kids get to the beach? Were they in lower buses? Did they take the subway? MSNBC says, good on Pete Buttigieg for calling out America's racist roads. Pete Buttigieg's acknowledgement that racism has historically played a role in the layout of America's cities. Ridiculous. It's garbage. Nonsense. It's totally untrue. No evidence. And now you have like Republicans being like, well, maybe we do have racist roads. No, we don't. We do not have racist roads. The interstate highway system built by Dwight D. Eisenhower was not an attribute of white supremacy. And the example that he gave is so ridiculous that we have bridge heights based on what Black and Puerto Rican kids are there. If it's too low, it affects everybody. Ridiculous thing to say. Okay, let's go to one more question here. Freedom@charliekirk.com. All about school boards. Charlie, can you give me a better understanding of the consequences of critical race theory in the schools? Essentially, kind of what is going to be the political consequence of all of this? Well, cut 30, a Virginia mom says that the nail in the coffin for Terry McAuliffe was when he campaigned with the teacher union boss. Remember, this is the creation of the new political party, the Party of Parents, the Parents' Party. Play cut 30.
How did Terry McAuliffe handle the education part of everything? Well, parents were very angry during school closures at the teachers' unions. And for me, the nail in the coffin was on his last day of campaigning. He brought the head of the teachers' union to his rally and she spoke. And it was like someone just poked me right in the eye and said, you think you want to have a say in your education? Well, you're not going to.
And that was the end of the political campaign for Terry McAuliffe. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.